Radio Nederland Wilderillebrup. Broadcasting from Hilversum. We're politically independent, but frequently misspelled.
Via medium wave, shortwave, and satellite, this is the Dutch International Service.
Keep this frequency clear.
Media Network, the weekly communications review, hosted by Jonathan Marks.
Hello, Deanna Janssen and I are back again with half an hour of what's happening in the world of international broadcasting, this time with quite a focus on Asia and developments in Pakistan in particular.
But first, a look ahead. 7 days from now, we're going to have the first in a series of historical documentaries examining radio in Holland 50 years ago. The second program will be broadcast on May the 3rd, covering Radio Herreizend Nederland, the forerunner to Radio Netherlands. I'd also like to thank everyone who sent us electronic mail and faxes since Sunday with feedback on reception since the start of the summer transmission schedule.
Now, news from the editorial office of the World Radio TV Handbook in Amsterdam. Joining me is Andy Sennett with an update.
Yes, some good news, Jonathan. We heard recently of the demise of a couple of DX clubs in North America, but in Australia there's a new club which is called SPUD. It's been mentioned before on Media Network. That stands for the South Pacific Union of DXs. Well, they've just issued a press release to say that they're issuing their magazine on floppy disk in Microsoft Word 6 format. And the list of editors for the magazine reads like a who's who of Australian DXing. In fact, their propagation editor is one Mike Bird. The idea of floppy disk bulletins isn't new. A club in France started doing that several years ago. But it is a welcome development, and it shows they're gearing up for the future.
Indeed, and with the cost of paper rising rapidly, it helps keep operating costs down. Of course, it's good for the environment as well. Speaking of which, about the membership fee?
Well, membership within Australia is $30 Australian, and this fee applies worldwide if you opt for the floppy disk version. For those who need a printed copy, it's $38 Australian if you live in New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, Fiji or Japan, and the rate for North America and Europe is $41 Australian.
More details right to the membership secretary. South Pacific Union of DXs, P.O. Box 68, Victoria, and the postal code 3787 in Australia. That's the South Pacific Union of DXs, P.O. Box 68, Victoria, 3787 in Australia. Now to some station news.
And of course a lot of schedule changes took place last Sunday. The Voice of Vietnam's relay transmission from Russia is now heard at 04-06 hours UTC in English on 7360 kHz and 06-07 hours in Spanish on 9520 kHz. Ola Alm in Sweden, who monitored those transmissions, tells me they come from a high-power transmitter near Krasnodar.
Right, at this point in the programme, let's take two telephone calls that came into the answer line, Hilversum 724-222, this past week.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Lynn Kohner in Seattle, Washington. The BBC apparently is setting up for the end of the world service at the beginning of the month. This is going to change into the, if you're lucky enough to be in one of the target areas, service. 1100 UTC, for example, the news is not going to be usable because the two transmitters, Singapore and Antigua, that have worked together so nicely to get a good signal, are going to be broadcasting different programs and therefore wiping each other out. They may have the technical ability to put different programs on different transmitters, but propagation has not been taken into account.
Hi, Jonathan. Marcel Roberts calling from Arnhem. Transworld Radio will begin using a shortwave transmitter in Albania to broadcast a Kurdish language program. The daily program will be heard from the 26th of March onwards between 500 and 515 in the morning and 1445 and 1500 UTC on 11745, so 11,745 kilohertz.
And I wonder how many people will be listening at that particular time, bearing in mind, of course, the conflict going on in that particular region. Also, interesting comment there about the BBC regionalization program. We'll be interested to see what happens, of course, when it starts next week. Andy, now to South Africa.
Yes, and more good news, at least if you collect QSL cards. Piet Conradi in South Africa posted a message on the internet to say that Sentech, which used to be the signal distribution company of the South African Broadcasting Corporation, has now become a separate organisation. And as a means of publicity, Centec has now started issuing its own QSL cards and has a set of 8 of them. To get one, you have to send your reception report directly to Kathy Otto, spelled O-T-T-O, Shortwave Services, Private Bag X06, Honeydew 2040 in South Africa.
That's Kathy Otto, Shortwave Services, Private Bag X06, Honeydew 2040 in South Africa. So if you write to that address, you'll get a different QSL to the one if you write directly to Channel Africa, is that right?
Yeah, that would appear to be the case, at least for the time being. And it makes a very pleasant change from stations which won't verify at all.
Indeed. Now, how about some frequencies?
Well, here's the English schedule of Channel Africa for the period up to September the 23rd. At 03:05 hours UTC, they're on 3220 and 5955 kHz. At 05:06 hours, on 5955 and 9695 kHz. 15:18 hours on 3220 and 7240 kHz. And finally, 16:17 hours on 9695 kHz.
And you can see by those frequencies that they're actually aiming at the target area of Africa itself. Now to Europe, you've got an update from the Vatican.
Yes, you may recall that some months ago I mentioned that Vatican Radio appeared to have discontinued all shortwave transmissions from within Vatican City. Well, I've been looking closely at their engineering schedule for the summer period, and it seems they now have 3 transmitters operating from the Vatican in addition to their main site at Santa Maria de Galleria, which is actually in Italy. The transmitter on 4010 kHz, it's listed as 10 kilowatts. Then there's the familiar 80 kilowatt transmitter on 6245 kHz. And finally, between 1355 and 1630 UTC, they list a 30 kilowatt transmitter in Vatican City, and other transmissions on this frequency do come from their main site.
And from shortwave down to medium wave.
Yes, the news just in from Adrian Peterson of Adventist World Radio. Sometime in April, AWR will start test broadcast to North Africa from Gibraltar. The test will be every day from 18 to 22 hours UTC on 1458 kHz, 1458, with a power of just 2 kilowatts. Programming will be in English, Arabic and French, and AWR will issue a special QSL card for correct reception reports addressed to Box 100252, Darmstadt, 64202 in Germany. Now, obviously, that's a difficult catch for most of us, but if you're planning a holiday in southern Spain, Morocco, or even Gibraltar itself, don't forget to take a radio.
Frequency again, 1458 kilohertz from 18 to 22 hours UTC. A difficult catch, but of course not impossible. Medium wave signals can travel a surprising long way, can't it?
Yes, and here's an amusing story to illustrate that. On the 11th of February, DXer Sam Dellett heard an announcer called Jerry Allen on radio station KPNW, 1120 kHz in Oregon, USA. Now, Jerry was inviting listeners more than 100 miles away from the station to contact him, saying they'd be eligible for an expenses paid trip for 2 people to watch a football game in Oregon. And Sam comments, "I should have entered the competition and blown their budget."
Why is that?
Well, Sam lives in Queensland, Australia.
Lovely story. Finally, some internet news.
Yes, Radio Australia now has an internet address, and it's a simple one. It's raust at ozemail, which is ozemail.com.au. And we have an additional internet address for the WRTH as well. My colleague Bart Kapiris, who handles all TV and satellite information, can be reached direct as bartk@euronet.nl.
And Radio Netherlands will expand its internet presence to include the World Wide Web. As from early April, Dutch domestic public broadcasters will follow suit on May the 1st. So, interactivity is in.
Now to Paris, where Radio France International has announced increased use of the internet as a result of the forthcoming French elections. Eric Baptiste is RFI's Director General.
Yes, we have added a very small service on the internet this summer, a news and current affair service. And we have tripled the audience of that service in 6 months. So it's growing at a fantastic rate. What you're reading in the press is true for once. And we also plan to use the internet in the coming weeks for one of our interactive programs, a phoning show that we have on RFI Europe.
Is that in connection with elections?
We are in fact considering adding special pieces to the internet during the period of the elections, the presidential elections in France. End of April, beginning of May, you know, there are two stages in a French election.
And what sort of response are you talking about at the moment? Is it thousands of people who are connecting every day?
It's 5,000 people every day.
One final question. RFI has been expanding, certainly in the last 4 or 5 years. There's been talk of relay stations, for example, in Thailand. Is all that still going ahead?
Yeah, we hope so. We are discussing now with the Thais about this relay station. The main problem we have encountered on that relay station was to get a firm decision from the French governments, not only the present government, but all the governments that have been in power in France since 1986 or 87. We had that firm decision from the present government in September, and we carry on that mandate. We are now discussing with the Thais, and we hope that we will be able to open that relay station in 97 or 98, and it will dramatically improve our reception on shortwave in Asia.
Talking of which, Victor Gunatilaka is on the line now from Colombo, Sri Lanka, with a quick update concerning a religious station in Africa, which has started to reply to reception reports from well outside the target area, namely the southern part of Africa.
Well, yes, the Christian Voice from Zambia with their 100 kilowatts is providing fairly good reception on 4965. And this, of course, is a recently introduced frequency, 4965. Well, both Sunil Deep and A.K. Rahman, the people who run the shortwave listener net on Sundays in South Asia, have both received QSL letters from the Christian Voice. And they, of course, reported reception on 6065 kilohertz.
There's also news from your home country of Sri Lanka.
Well, Transworld Radio, after almost 20 years, finally got clearance to use English and Tamil on their medium wave frequency of 882 from their 400 kilowatt transmitter. With this introduction of English and Tamil on medium wave, there is a very strong possibility that they will discontinue 6035 kilohertz from their 12 kilowatt transmitter.
What languages did they put out on medium wave up till now?
Well, they used almost 10 Indian languages like Marathi and even the very remote southeast Indian language of Santhani. So the Sri Lankan government did not mind anything, any language not spoken in Sri Lanka going out on medium wave, but not the three national languages.
But now they've relaxed that rule.
Oh yes, there's a lot of media freedom with the introduction of private television and FM stations in Sri Lanka. So we are breathing a lot of media freedom here.
But what about elsewhere in South Asia? We've talked a lot about FM growth in India recently in the program, but in neighbouring Pakistan, they're behind in licensing stations. I've been talking to Radio Netherlands correspondent in Islamabad, Firan Bukhari. So what's the Pakistani government doing?
Well, they've been talking about this for about 6 months now, and certainly on paper the intention is very much there. They have yet to demonstrate that they would actually give out the licenses. There's also a bit of concern among some journalists that although the licenses would be given out, that one is not clear whether the news and current affairs aspect would also be totally deregulated. That is something that we have to see. There's also concern whether they would put in other restrictions, such as, for example, the power of a station, an FM station, to press the whoever buys or whoever sets up the new station to only target audience in small areas. So those are concerns which are still there, and I think one has to see what happens next if a license is actually given, what would be the terms and conditions, all those kinds of things.
And if the radio stations do start up, I mean, are there going to be people trained to do that? Because at the moment, I believe that Radio Pakistan does all the training of radio journalists.
Well, that's one of the most unfortunate aspects of how radio journalism has developed in Pakistan over the years. There are several journalism schools in the country, but none is equipped to train journalists in radio or TV journalism. And that only leaves people with the opportunity to work for government organizations, Radio Pakistan or Pakistan Television, to get the skills. And I think for private radio broadcasting, if that indeed does start up in Pakistan, that would be one of the biggest challenges. How do you train journalists in the skills and get them running independent broadcasting stations?
Do you think they're going to be better than Radio Pakistan? I mean, what's the level of programming at the moment on Radio Pakistan?
Well, Radio Pakistan, as far as news and current affairs is concerned, it's generally regarded as quite poor quality because it's state-dominated, has been like that for ever since one can remember. Any independence in radio broadcasting, which hopefully gives listeners the information that they're not getting through Radio Pakistan, information about their own country, I think is something that is going to be very welcome. And one certainly looks forward to that.
Well, what about language? Because, I mean, Urdu, of course, is the main language in Pakistan. I mean, the BBC, for example, puts out programs in Urdu, which I guess must be pretty popular.
Well, the BBC's Urdu service is probably the most popular foreign broadcast that comes into Pakistan, and the language does make a difference. But I think it also has to be said that given that Pakistan was part of a former British colony, given the fact that higher education is mostly in English, there are quite a few people who understand English. And for broadcasters communicating in both languages or either one of the two languages, I think there's going to be a good chance.
What do you think about, though, the popularity of shortwave, bearing in mind, of course, that satellite television is taking a major foothold right across Asia and presumably also in Pakistan?
I think shortwave is probably going to remain popular for some time to come because it's true that people can tune in through satellite television channels, can tune in to radio, but the number of people who could do that, who could afford to buy a satellite dish, remains a very small proportion of the population. And given Pakistan's economic realities, I think for several years to come, that would remain the case. So I think at least for the next few years, shortwave is going to remain in demand.
But what about the cost of satellite receivers? They are dropping, aren't they?
They have dropped over a period of time, but they're still well above the reach of the ordinary Pakistani. The cost of a receiver today is something like 120 times the daily wage of an ordinary worker. And it's very hard to imagine that someone like that could afford to buy a satellite dish, even if the cost drops by half or even more than that.
So what are we talking about, $400 for a satellite dish?
$400 for a satellite dish, but an ordinary laborer makes less than $4 a day. Most Pakistanis are on those kinds of wages, so that even if the price drops to $200, or for that matter $100, it would still be very difficult for them to afford to buy a dish.
What you notice in some of the larger cities, though, that some entrepreneurs buy a satellite dish and then start connecting up the local the neighbors.
That has happened in many cases. In fact, there's a very interesting case that in the industrial city of Gujranwala last year, a factory owner lost all his laborers in a strike, and then he could not find replacement. So what he did was that one day he set up a satellite dish in his backyard, tuned into MTV, and the story that we've heard is that in about a week's time, he had 22 families who came and set up tents in his backyard and were quite happy to work for him. But I think these are cases which remain more a kind of an urban phenomena than anything else. 70% of Pakistan's population lives in the rural areas, and this is the kind of trend which has not reached the villages yet, and I suspect that given the low rates of literacy, for several years to come, it would remain so.
BBC has an advantage, of course, in being able to get into Pakistan on medium wave through transmitter time that it hires from Radio Nepal. Is there any other way that BBC Radio has improved its coverage? Because it's also on the satellite, too.
The fact that it has been on satellite gives it an advantage, given that the signal is much clearer. They've also tried to expand the network of contributors in Pakistan, train more and more people to contribute towards the Urdu service. And I think that has helped them to gain more listeners. I mean, basically, the lesson for international radio broadcasters should be looking at a case like Pakistan or similar cases is that listeners at the end of the day are not entirely interested in what's happening in Europe or North America. Many listeners want to know about things happening in their immediate region or, for that matter, in their own countries. And given that a company like Radio Pakistan does not serve that need, there's very much an interest in knowing more about Pakistan, more about the region, even if it comes through foreign radio broadcasts.
Is it easy to find shortwave radios in Pakistan?
It's not very hard. The market for electronic goods has literally flourished over the years. There's a large market of smuggled goods in Pakistan. Smuggling remains one of the major problems for the country. Almost 100 billion rupees worth of smuggling taking place every year. And a large part of the goods that come to Pakistan are audio equipment. So finding a shortwave radio is not difficult.
Well, finally, what's your fascination as far as radio is concerned? I mean, you're a well-known radio and print journalist, but why not go to television?
Well, I think the fact that generally most listeners can tune into radio no matter where they are. In Pakistan, for example, sometimes I go out to rural areas, to my own village, and the thing that the scene that fascinates me is getting up early in the morning, seeing a peasant drive by on his tractor, a man who's never been to school, but he's got his radio on the side. Those are the examples which are an enormous source of motivation and encouragement for a person like myself.
Input on the output to Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222, 1200 JG, Hilversum, the Netherlands. Or fax your fax to Hilversum 724-239.
Michael Lang lives in Hamburg, Germany, and asks when publications like the WRTH will be available on CD-ROM. I asked the publisher of the World Radio TV Handbook, Glenn Heffernan, who works at the Billboard office in New York, whether multimedia productions are due for release.
Absolutely. We think of ourselves as information providers, an authoritative source for international broadcasting information. The method of delivery is almost unimportant to us. So if we provide the information to our users through the printed book medium, or a CD-ROM, or CD audio, or online services, doesn't much matter to us, as long as we get the best information on a timely basis to the people that need it the most.
So what sort of timescale are you talking about for a CD-ROM?
Well, we are looking at doing a CD-ROM probably for 1996.
And what about internet?
Internet. We have done a lot of experimentation in the internet. We're designing home pages now, and we hope to be able to make an announcement probably within the next 6 months.
Of course, the advantage is that more and more people have access to home computers. I think the figure in the UK projected is that by the year 2000, 42% of households will have a home computer, and presumably access to things like CD-ROM players. So that gives you, you can do more than just put something on a piece of paper.
Sure. In a CD-ROM application, we could include the multimedia aspect of the information that we do collect on a regular basis at the WRTH offices and are not able to distribute using the traditional printed page. We could include memorable moments of international broadcasting on a historic basis as well as what's happening currently. We could provide interval signals, which would help people identify stations. So it's a very exciting prospect, and we're looking forward to producing this. To achieve 50 years of history in the publishing field is quite something, and we are announcing that we will produce a audio CD which will include some highlights of memorable moments in broadcasting, as well as a discussion of new media and what it means to the international broadcasting community. So that will be available in both bookshops as well as in record stores worldwide, probably in March 1996.
In the meantime, one of the world's best utility guides has appeared as a CD-ROM. For 55 German marks, you get a silver disc containing 14,000 selected frequencies from the 1995 Guide to Utility Stations by Klingenfuss Publications. It's designed to run on a PC with Microsoft Windows, and of course you'll need a CD-ROM player. I hazard a guess that more shortwave listeners in Europe and North America have access to such a player than the average member of the public. You can do some fantastically fast searches with this database. If you want a slightly more comprehensive version on paper, then that will cost you 80 German marks. Either way, after 3 weeks of use here at Radio Netherlands, we conclude that there's nothing quite like this CD-ROM version. More information from Jörg Klingenfuss Publications, Hagenloher Straße 14, D72070 in Tübingen, Germany. You can fax on 49 for Germany and then 7071 600849. That's 49 7071 600849.
I'll give you the address again. Jörg Klingenfuss Publications, Hagenloher Straße 14, D72070 in Tübingen, Germany. Now to the answer line, a follow-up to an item we carried a little while back.
Hello, Jonathan. Dennis Nelson, Minneapolis, Minnesota, USA. I have a question and a couple of numbers for you. You mentioned a number 202-619-1979 to monitor the VOA by telephone. I'm wondering if you know if VOA Europe has a monitor number, because that's something we can't get in this country. And it might be nice to call in during low rate periods and listen to VOA Europe, if they indeed have a monitor number, and if you would be able to pass that along. A couple of numbers for you. I'm probably not supposed to know them, but they are at Air Force bases. The interesting thing about these numbers is if you call them through AT&T, they remain what is known as on hook. In other words, when you call through, you get the information you need, or you can hear the time stations, but after about a minute and a half, you get a recording saying your party is not answering, which means in this country you're not charged for them. Those numbers, WWV is on 402-271-4601, and you never know what you'll get because it's a radio tuned to 5, 10, or 15 megs. I can't tell which, but that number is 907-552-3553. So I hope you find those numbers handy and give them a try. They might work even over there in the Netherlands.
Actually, they don't work in the Netherlands, and I'm afraid there's no number to monitor VOA Europe. But never mind. Who knows? It's worth trying. But talking of numbers, BBC Monitoring has announced a full internet service. But as Chris Greenway of the Foreign Media Unit explains, it's aimed mainly at professionals.
Yes, the office in which I work, which is now in fact known as the Foreign Media Unit, produces weekly, as you know, two publications, one of which is a newsletter, World Broadcasting Information, or WBI as it's better known. The other one is a collection of broadcasting and transmission schedules for both radio and TV stations around the world, put together in a package called Broadcasting Schedules. For many years, both of these publications have been available in traditional hard copy form. More recently, they've been available on a dial-in basis, where people equipped with suitable modems and computers at their end could actually dial us up in Reading and get access to our bulletin board and then download the material that we had placed there. Now we're offering a service whereby we can post both the schedules and the World Broadcasting Information section of SWB Media, as we call it, on the internet. And anyone interested in subscribing to that should contact our marketing department.
Because it is something that's not free, it's a closed user group.
Oh yes, very much so. And in fact we are putting a bit of a premium on this service because obviously potentially people should be able to get this service quicker than in the post, particularly for our numerous overseas readers who would otherwise have to wait perhaps several days to get this material on hard copy form through the post, will in fact be able to get it on internet, even in fact before it gets posted from this building via the conventional mail.
Chris Greenway and his department reports that Radio Metropolis, a commercial station which began testing on shortwave a few months ago, is off the air in Prague, Czech Republic, and, as far as we can tell, internationally as well. Sources at Metropolis said that they hope to be back on air soon, but offered no details on when this might be. There appear to be funding problems. The station has done well on the FM market, but the success of the tests on shortwave are unclear. And the religious program by Aum Shinrikyo, which has spent around $2,000 a day hiring airtime on Russian transmitters for broadcast in English, Russian and Japanese, was taken off the air as we went to air last week. Anatoly Tupikin, the director of MAYEK, the major Russian radio network, said this was out of sympathy with the victims of last week's nerve gas attack in Tokyo, Japan. The religious sect is suspected of being involved in the tragedy.
Thanks, Diana. Now to Mike Bird in Melbourne, who has the propagation review. Mike.
Jonathan, the solar flux increased and the geomagnetic field was stormy on Sunday. Solar activity was low except on Wednesday the 22nd when an M2 solar flare peaked at 1641 UTC. The solar flux ranged between 95 and 89. The average works out to 91.1 and equals an effective sunspot number of 36, which is up on the previous week's figure of 29. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 3 and 32, which represents quiet to minor storm conditions. The magnetic field was quiet until 9 hours UTC on Sunday, when it became active with minor storm periods. Conditions then quietened to generally active levels on Monday and Tuesday.
And what about conditions between now and next Thursday, taking us into April?
IPS Radio and Space Services expect solar activity will remain low. The geomagnetic field should continue at active levels until Saturday the 1st of April, and then hopefully it will quieten for the remainder of the week.
Thanks, Mike. And that's all for now. From Diana Janssen, myself, have a pleasant weekend.